Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Well, today is Tuesday. It's February 18th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. I'm looking forward to speak with Shanae Williams. She is the Yonkers City Councilwoman representing the 1st District. And what's so compelling about her specifically and particularly at this time is that she will speak to the affordable housing ordinance that she will be introducing to the city council membership today. And that in itself is very, very compelling. Oh, I see she's already on. So let's bring her in. Bear with me a moment. Good morning. Ms. Williams, how are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. I'm well. Thank you. How are you?
Okay. Well, I appreciate you calling today. I was really taken aback in such a good way when I recognized that you were going to be speaking about an affordable housing ordinance that you were going to introduce to the city council membership. What was the purpose of doing it this way, and why is it such an important issue, the affordable housing ordinance that you're going to present to the city council today?
So over the past 2 years, you know that I've been trying to strengthen the current affordable housing ordinance that we have. Right now, it's only provides for 10% of the new construction units to be dedicated to affordable. I wanted to change that.
Oh, can I just interrupt you for a moment? Let me just interrupt you for a moment. Any possibility that you're not speaking close to your phone? Because the volume seems to be weak.
Better?
I don't know. Yes,
is
it
better?
Is. That's great.
Oh,
yes,
I was
it
saying,
is. Very nice.
I've been looking to change the current affordable housing ordinance to strengthen it so that instead of having 10% of those new units be affordable, 20% at least 18% would be affordable. And last year, what happened was the Democrats, we met with, I called a meeting with some of the developers in my district and throughout the city to let them know that we were looking to change the ordinance and we wanted their feedback on it. And they were not on board, obviously. They were not happy with changing the ordinance from 10% to 18% and changing from the Westchester County median income to Yonkers income. And they, someone suggested that it would make more sense if they had an even number like 20% rather than 18, because at least that way it would be enough for them to go and try to seek other incentives to cover the loss of making certain units affordable. They could go to the state and apply for, you know, whatever, you know, tax incentives they can get for that. So I didn't realize there was
a differential between getting a tax incentive from different sources,
at
20%
than
at 10%.
That's why they have, in New York City, based on the New York City model, they are able to get more incentives because how it's set up there. And so I'm trying to find a balance where we can be helpful to them, but also more importantly, where we can provide more affordable housing units. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day, instead of having,
right.
You know, people fight for the 10 apartments that they can get out of 100, they'll be fighting for so much more. So actually submitted the ordinance, the updated legislation for this week. So tonight in our rules committee meeting, we'll be deciding which committee to put that agenda item so that we can discuss it further.
Uh-huh.
Not only am I changing the percentage from 10 to 20, but I'm changing, instead of trying to work off of, originally I wanted to do the income, have it based on Yonkers area median income, but that wasn't something that I know that the administration thought was sensible. They thought that we were going to be leaving certain income out of the opportunity to apply for housing. And so I decided to
keep
the Westchester County income.
Way?
Well, they said that if we made it based on Yonkers income, then the folks who were not qualified for completely low income, but they were still struggling and weren't able to pay for their rent, wouldn't be included. So for a young professional, for example, who's making $50,000, wouldn't have an opportunity to apply because they'll be making too much, yet still they can't pay for the cost of market rate apartments. And so I don't want to exclude anyone out of the ordinance, but I do want to make sure that people from Yonkers have a real opportunity to apply and successfully get these apartments. And so what we've done is we've kept the Westchester area median income, but we've changed the percentages of how many units have to abide by that specific income. For example, before the ordinance called for 20% of the 10%, the 20% of those units to be between the income of the area median income of, I want to say, 40% and 60%. Now, instead of 20% of those being in that income bracket, I want it to be 40%. So a wider group of people will be able to apply and get those units rather than a small. Does that make sense?
Well, I guess the problem in understanding what you're saying is that you're talking in percentages. So how is the Westchester model? It's based on a certain valuation. How are we less than that or more than that in Yonkers? And why is there a discrepancy between Yonkers' measurements and that of the county? Are we wealthier than Westchester County?
The income for a family of four in Westchester County, the average income is about $117,000 or something like that. But for Yonkers,
okay,
the income for a family of four is significantly less, probably about, I want to say, like $80,000 or less. So
okay.
Instead of...
So then how does that affect us differently? How is it deleterious, for example, for the developer to have How is it deleterious to the developer?
Mm-hmm.
When our baselines are different than Westchester County, so our people earn less,
right,
which is a reality, and
right.
So based on our reality, does it really matter what Westchester County does, and why can't the funding for the developer be compensated in other ways through other sources, or does that not work out at the end? Who benefits here?
About how the developers get compensated, because I think that they're getting enough money, to be honest. I'm really just trying to find a way to get my colleagues on the council and to see that we need to do more for our constituency in Yonkers. So, you know.
Well, that's a lucid aspect of it. I think you pointed out maybe we need to impress listeners again about it. The bottom line is, how do we take care of people who live in Yonkers who have a different potential of remuneration in this city as opposed maybe to other sections? I mean, hasn't that been our argument for years and years and years, that we are more stressed financially than other communities, even though we live in a very rich community overall in Westchester County? They earn more than we do. That shows up in our schools.
Right.
So what's there to convince the other city council members? I don't understand why they would be reluctant. I mean,
I think you would have to have with those who don't agree with me. I know last year I had a conversation with my colleagues, and Councilmember Rubo seems to think that a good solution to the affordable housing crisis is to ask developers to put money into a fund specifically so that they can fix up the neighboring housing in the community where they're going to build. But really, it's not the answer for affordable housing. Given the city a reservation or a facelift, it's not the same thing as providing more units. that people can afford to live.
Forgive me again. I've got to ask you, can you speak a little bit closer to the phone, or maybe it's just a very bad connection. I don't know why.
You know what? Let me call back from a different line. It might be.
Okay, that would be terrific.
I'll call you right back. Maybe that'll help it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Well, there we are. Very, very lucid points by Shanae Williams, who's a council member from the 1st District. you know, the bottom line is, as she said, the bottom line is we earn less than maybe other people, other communities in Westchester County. So the algorithm for defining the basis for all this is the difference, I guess, of how we should define it. So thank you for calling back. I appreciate
yes.
that. So what did Mr. Rubo say?
A good solution to address affordable housing in Yonkers is to ask the developers to put money into a fund specifically so that the city can take it and use it to fix up the neighboring houses in the community where they're going to do that development. And I don't think that that is the answer. That is not providing more apartments that folks can live in, that they can afford to live in. That is giving the city a faceless.
I missed your point because I didn't hear what you said. He wants to have the developers invest or set aside money for what?
For fixing up the neighboring homes where they're going to do their development. So if they're coming down on Main Street and they're going to put a nice big building, they want to put money into the neighborhood by giving the city money so that we can go and help homeowners and other folks in the neighborhood fix their homes. That's not providing more units. That's not affordable housing. That is
right.
completely different. Right. That is exactly right. That is a renovation.
Again,
that is a facelift. That is not going to help any person looking for affordable housing get an apartment that they can afford to pay for.
Right.
So, like I said, I'm with all my colleagues on affordable housing because I don't think that they all understand what it means to really struggle and need housing that you can afford to live in. So I think that discussion is going to be very important for when we do put it in committee, and other members will have an opportunity to talk about what they would like to see in this ordinance, if anything.
I really don't understand. So evidently, Mr. Rubo, it just dawned on me while you were talking, he's a new real estate chair, isn't he?
He's a real estate chair, has he?
But then he doesn't quite get it, does he?
So he does not get it. I'll be lobbying tonight to try to get that my affordable housing legislation into legislation and codes, because technically we are looking to change a current city code. The appropriate committee for that would be legislation and codes, but he wants it in his committee that he chairs, and it baffles me because, one, he doesn't really understand what affordable housing is, and two, I don't trust that he is on board with what we're looking to do, and I don't trust that he would want to see that legislation come to fruition. Right.
If the developers set aside money for fixing up, as you say, the facade or whatever, even the interior of some of these other apartments, as you pointed out, it doesn't create more affordable housing units for a population that is growing. We not only have people who are born here and growing here, growing families in Yonkers, but we also have, as far as the city of Yonkers is concerned, we have more kids attending our schools, so therefore there are more adults who are guardians or parents of these children. So we need more housing units. And more housing units
for families as well, not just for singles and millennials and and we have to think about the seniors who and veterans who are on fixed income that can't afford the sky-high price apartment. And that is why it is so important to have someone who understands that, chair this legislation. And I know that he's going to try to get it in his committee tonight. And I know that, with the coalition that they have with the Republicans and the majority, they are able to do that if, because they have the four votes. But I am going to fight to get it in the right committee.
You know what? We don't get to anything because you're going so quickly and it's not fully explained. No, it's not funny. This is a very, very important issue. It's one of the most basic issues for the city of Yonkers that has to tackle. This is a predominant for everything in the city. Concerned about gentrification. We're concerned about being pushed out of the city. We're looking at affordable housing as part of the remedy, which every community all across the nation is doing. So I don't know how we could be different and almost an aberration, even in the city, in Westchester County, because other communities are looking for the same thing. So what is interesting, though, here is that how is it conceivable if you mention that with a majority of four, well, look, there are
two Republicans, a former Republican, and the majority leader.
Okay, right. So the majority leader is a Democrat. The two other city council members in one and three are also Democrats. However, the two Republicans and the guy who happens to be the real estate chair changed his affiliation from Republican to Democrat. He was elected as a Republican. He became a Democrat only recently, and his affiliation as a Republican does not take effect until this November. However, he's voting with the other with the majority leader and the two other Republicans plus himself. So you get a majority of four. So now the question becomes then, how is it conceivable that a woman who is in the second district, Corazon Pineda, who also happens to have a Hispanic background, people of color who can't afford and are living in some of the worst conditions in Yonkers because they don't have the affordability to they can't even meet the standards for affordable housing units. How could she conceivably vote that way? Has she forgotten who she represents in the second district?
Well, we had a conversation last night, Hezzy, and I feel comfortable sharing this publicly because I don't think that anything that we really discussed within our caucus is all that confidential anyway, based on past experiences with this specific caucus. So we had a discussion on trying to figure out where we wanted all these legislation that we're going to decide on today to go, what committee we want them to go into. And the majority leader and the chair of real estate were adamant that they want to put this in real estate, even though I am the person that introduced it with the co-sponsors, Mike Cater, our council president, and Councilwoman Tasha Diaz. And we are saying that we want it in legislation and codes because that is the appropriate committee for this legislation. It is a change in the city code that we're looking to do. It is not a project that is affordable housing project that we're looking
to. So legislation and codes would change what the formula for affordable housing?
Right.
We're
looking to change this affordable housing ordinance that I've introduced. It is specifically to amend a current law. It is not a project, a housing project. It is not developers coming in because they're looking to do some zone changes or specifically. It is not real estate specific. So it does not belong in real estate. It belongs in
legislation. Because there is no project that you're dealing with.
Right.
There's no specific
this is a general
project.
Law.
You're changing
exactly.
the law.
Right.
Okay.
And so,
doesn't that... Okay, and so what?
Ask you a question. So what I'm saying is, I know that tonight, when this item comes up and we go to vote, I know that I, along with the Council President and Tasha Diaz, we don't have the numbers to decide which committee it goes into because they have that coalition between the four of them and they'll be able to decide and choose that it should go in real estate, even though we're telling them not to put it in real estate. And I'll be frank, the reason why, like you've spoken about briefly, I don't think that the right person to chair this item is Councilmember Rubo,
it's not necessarily because he's a recent Republican that switched parties, but it's because I don't believe that he understands what real affordable housing is. I don't think he understands how important it is to the community that I represent, and that the council president and Sasha Diaz and Corazon Pineda represent and understand. And that is where I'm having issues having him chair it, because I fear that, you know, if it's not to his liking, he might try to suffocate this item in real estate committee, and we'll never get to see it on the council floor for a vote.
Well, that's a very lucid perspective. I think that stands to reason that's the case. What I cannot appreciate is that Corazon Pineda, who represents as the majority leader, but she represents the second district, would dismiss this as an unnecessary function, and it does need to change the law of the city. But the question is, too, Councilman Rubio, isn't he conflicted when it comes to real estate? I don't even know how he got that portfolio, because he's been a proponent of particular developments, where he also happens to be a proponent of the people who are his landlord.
Right. Exactly.
Well, that's a big conflict of interest in my book.
He ended up being chair of real estate because of a backroom deal that was made with him and Corazon for her to be
correct
majority leader. So that's
right.
It is what it is. But it doesn't change the fact that he really doesn't have much development going on, or any development going on in his district. It's really all in the first, second, and third district. And honestly,
mm-hmm.
I think if we would be doing the community, the constituents of Yonkers, a disservice by having him oversee this item in his committee when he really just doesn't get it.
Well, evidently not. I think it needs to be stressed again. What he wants to do is to make housing near wherever a development might crop up, and there is no specific development on the books at all right now. So he just wants to fix up the facade, so it's a fixer-upper type of thing. But we are looking for affordable housing units to house people,
right?
Because there are people
right
that don't have housing. So that's
right,
the
we
problem.
Have a growing homeless population. We have
yeah.
you know, families that have been on waiting lists for housing for years that still cannot get
right
appropriate housing, and it's not fair to them. It's not right, and we have to address it, and we have to do the right thing. And one way to do that is by increasing the percentage of units that are
correct
to be affordable in the city of Yonkers whenever a new developer comes in. And we know that developers want to develop here in Yonkers. It's ripe for development, and so we have to get these laws in order from now.
That makes a lot of sense. Are you getting any feedback from any other members of city government with respect to this, other than the people you mentioned, President Mike Cater and
Tasha
Diaz and yourself?
I haven't spoken with the Republican caucus, Mike Green and Anthony Morante.
Okay.
I will
mm-hmm.
be talking to them today, but I can
okay.
assure you that I know how the end game is going to go because,
okay.
They are very close-knit. Like I said, they have, the numbers to vote however they want between the four of them, and they pretty
mm-hmm.
much stick together. And, I'm not saying that just to say it. It's evident because this happened the first week in the new year when we were
yeah. –
when I was advocating for a specific item that a development in my district, asking that it stay in the Committee of Real Estate until the community is able to have certain conversations with the administration and the necessary folks from our planning department to be more inclusive of MWBEs. They ignored my request, the four of them, and they moved it out and onto the agenda for a vote anyway. So it really didn't leave much wiggle room, but thankfully, the administration, the mayor, he was very helpful and was able to address my concerns before
mm-hmm.
that item came up for a vote. But it still just goes to show that whenever something of conflict comes up for myself or Tasha or Mike, we're going to we're going to be fighting. We're going to have to fight to make sure that we advocate and get our voices heard. But we know that it's a losing battle each time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a losing battle. But
you're right, Hezzy, because the community,
I could understand,
at the end of the day,
the struggle is there.
Can advocate with us. You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, I don't believe that it can necessarily always be a bad battle for us, because I do know that at the end of the day, the community has to come out and they have to advocate, and
right.
all of these council members answer to the community at the end of the day. So we do have that to rely on.
Well, I think that's a very powerful tool. One would not expect the need to bring people from a community out just to, push the concept that is so appropriate for the city of Yonkers, where we require more affordable housing units than what we have at present. And it really doesn't make much of a difference for the developer one way or the other if you're going to be instituting 20% that's affordable housing units as opposed to 10. And as you pointed out, the developer, whoever they may be, even though there are no specific projects at the moment, are going to get greater benefits that compensate them for the construction of these housing units, where they're now going to allocate 20% of the housing units to affordable tenants. So I don't understand where the disconnect is, especially when we're talking about an issue that is pertinent to people of lower socioeconomic means who have been instrumental in maintaining and sustaining this city of Yonkers for many, many, many years. And I mean, how much benefit are they getting out of this whole system? Or are they being simply used? And how could someone like a Corazon Pineda dismiss them? And then how can someone who is sitting on the real estate?
I do believe that she is for affordable housing. I just think that she has aligned herself with the wrong people and not, and as leader, she should really be looking to the majority of her caucus members to see how we will move together as one. And that is where I believe some disconnect is, because she's not doing that.
I don't, your concept is rational to one extent. However, the point is that she won her leadership role only because the three Republicans voted with her, so that she was able to outmaneuver the Democrats for whatever purpose, other than probably self-aggrandizement for her purpose. So, but the real issue here is that she's still supposed to represent her district, and she realizes if it goes into real estate, it doesn't change the law. So nothing's been done other than to squash this and destroy this concept that it changes our law. So how does
she goes into real estate, the risk I think of putting it into real estate is too much for me personally. I don't think it's the right decision. Regardless of what happens tonight, if it ends up in real estate or legislation and codes, I'm pretty sure that my position doesn't change, and I know that my community will stand with me and fight for this ordinance to be passed and put the pressure on all the council members, and hopefully we'll be able to get it done that way.
Well, it would, because they're not your community and any every other community is not going to gain anything if it goes into the real estate. It's not going to change the law of the charter, and that's the only issue.
Unless we are able to convince John Rubo somehow to eventually move it out of committee and not let it die in committee, and we move it into our rules committee and onto the agenda.
Oh, I didn't realize that you could hold on to it for a certain amount of time.
Whenever an item goes into a committee, you can call a committee meeting on it right away and start discussing it and make the edits that you need, and then move it out of the committee to the council floor, to the council agenda for a vote. My fear is that I don't have confidence in that process, that the chair of that committee would be willing to move it forward. I fear that he will do everything he can to hold it or try to change it to where it just doesn't make sense and it defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do to provide more affordable housing units will not be a reality. That's my fear, which is why I would rather it go into legislation and codes, which is a committee that the majority leader, Corazon Pineda Isaac, chairs, because, you know, this affects her community more than, you know, she has to, I think she would most certainly want to work with everyone in making sure that this gets done. I think that she's for affordable housing. She gets it. But this will hold her to that by making her the chair of this committee. We will be able to see it on the floor for a vote at some point.
If she's the head of the legislation and code committee, so then then it does belong in her under her control, and also since she has the support of the Republicans, three of which one is now become a Democrat. The bottom line, though, is between those four, she should be able to lead them to something that's rational and is specific as well to her particular community, because the district, too, is not an aberration. And when you look at all the districts, that the majority of districts and the number, the population is greater among four of you that rather than just three of you. So they have to recognize that. And she has to recognize that. I'm just in shock that this is not a political game. It's a question of serving the public interest, not serving Republican or Democrat.
And that's key, you know, Eddie.
Yeah.
It's about serving the public. Right.
Yeah, that's what everyone says when they try to get elected, and when they try to get reelected. But you've got, you know, I'm just blown away that this has become an issue. Because, I don't know how people cannot understand that with a population growth, we need to have more housing, and it has to be affordable. And it's like you said, it's not just for people who are working and not earning, you know, high salaries, but it's also about seniors. It's about people we celebrate and say, well, thank you for your service. But in the meantime, they don't even have a place to call home. And they're also homeless. And and it goes on and on and on. When are we going to deal with reality?
It's a good question,
Well,
Eddie.
Thanks to you, we are.
We're trying.
Doing heavy lifting.
Yes. I hope, you know, that the folks that are listening today will come out to our rules committee meeting tonight and really stay on top of this issue, because it is important that we address this as
when
a community.
When is the rules?
It's tonight at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And were you able to advise people beforehand that are constituents in your district to call them out to conceivably come in support of it, or it's not that's something that isn't normally done? I don't know.
That is, it's not something that I have done for this specific thing, but I will be posting it on Facebook, and I will be reaching out to certain community leaders to let them know. You know, I didn't think that this would be an issue, which is why I didn't, you know, make it a thing last week on Friday when I introduced it, because I really thought that people would want to do the sensible thing and the right thing by just putting it in the correct committee, which is legislation and codes.
Mm-hmm.
But so now I have to just kind of do everything I can to get the word out. And regardless of which committee it goes into, I know that we'll have time to have community input. I know that we'll have time to have the community come out to our committee meetings to talk about, to share their opinions. And if we have to, you know, I'll be going into the community for sure and letting people know that this has been reintroduced and this is a topic that I need their support on, and I'm sure that they will be there.
Well, you know what's so interesting? Maybe this is, I don't know, derogatory for some people's minds, but I'm thinking that if Corazon Piñera doesn't take this particular issue up under her watch, under legislation and codes, then maybe she should become a Republican. And then we'll see where that goes.
We'll see. I don't think she'll do that. I wouldn't advise her to do that. But, you know, I do think that she has to show true leadership here and do the right thing instead of trying to look for cover by passing it off to John Rubo.
Right.
So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Any other words of wisdom, since it's been full of wisdom from you today? I appreciate that very much.
Know that, you know, we'll keep in touch, as it's always good to hear from you and to be on your show. Thank you for having me. And I will certainly be in touch. If you can make it tonight, it will be good to see you there.
I'm not quite sure, but I will if I'm not there specifically, but I will definitely be watching it tonight.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay,
I just may
not be able to make it because I've got to go to a court hearing tomorrow on Wednesday, and I've got to wake up in order to get to the court as early as 4:30. So I just don't know if I'll be able to hang in there that much, but I will try to do it. I will watch it. Oh, and then I heard all of a sudden, I was in shock actually, that the city council meetings are played more often than once, because it used to be that they only played it during the time it was taking place.
That was something that the council president thought was necessary. He worked it out with the administration, and I'm glad that they were able to do that, because it is important for folks to, you know, have an opportunity to see and listen for themselves if they've missed the original. Yeah, so it is a good idea.
Absolutely. Good point. Well, much success tonight. I hope it all goes well, because I just can't see how it can't. Sometimes, I don't know, maybe am I too narrow-minded? Because I used to think that I was pretty open to a lot of things. I just don't understand where the sensibility is on this one, how anyone could not be with it. Because even if you afford, if you change even the law, then that doesn't negate other people from not building that I mean, it's not going to cause people to stop building in Yonkers, right?
Right. It's not.
Everyone
wants
to clamor to get in here.
They didn't stop building
away,
in New York City. I don't think they'll stop building in Westchester or in Yonkers.
No, it can't happen. And you know what's interesting? The city of Yonkers believes that even though we're now regarded as the fourth largest city in the state, they believe that the population in Yonkers has risen to such an extent that we are now the third largest city in the state. So
we'll find out when the census is completed. I don't know.
Absolutely. But I think we're going to have another 50,000 more people than we have at present. You watch, there'll be a 25% increase. I'm almost sure of it. Because,
we're
counting the number of people here, not necessarily citizens. And a lot of them haven't been counted, as you well know.
Right.
So
we have a very low count in Yonkers. Yeah.
Horrendous.
Yonkers and like other cities like Mount Vernon, very low count for the census. And this is the year to change that. So you know, we have to tell our neighbors, tell our friends to look out. Mid-March.
I think it's the 10th
mid-March.
Of March.
Mid-March. They'll be sending out letters with a code that folks have to use to take the census online. And if they don't do that, then there will be extensive follow-up. But I really just want people to not throw the mail out, or just to check their mail and pay attention and make sure that they are counted. It's so important.
What's interesting, I never realized for every individual, including babies, that are not counted, that costs the city $2,500 a year in a funding from the state, from the federal government.
Right, from the federal,
huge.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Right.
All right, so I wish you well tonight, and I'll certainly be tuning in if I can't quite make it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Be well. Bye. oh, how compelling, you know, Shanae Williams, you know, there are people on the website that keep saying, you know, she's the next mayor. You never can tell because she's on target on this one. I don't think it's an opinion. It's not a political opinion. It just makes sense to me by the simplest denominators. When you have people who are clamoring for housing and are clamoring to set up a home and in Yonkers, and there are other places, but you know, people have relationships with the city of Yonkers, and we need to celebrate that. At the same time, they're not stopping to build in Mount Vernon, and they're probably in the same position that we're in. There are places like Portchester, they're building over there. So, you know, there are a lot of different communities, and somehow or another, we always get into this muddle. I don't understand it in the city of Yonkers, where there are issues, and it's not political. It's not politically energized. These are issues that are just simply lucid based on a reality. So how can we claim that we have more people living in the city of Yonkers and more kids in the schools, and at the same time, we won't vote legislation to change our need for affordable housing? I don't get it. I really don't get it. You know, which way is it going to go? We're building high rises that are expensive, market rate, and guess what? They're not all selling out. Many of them, you know, how do you spruce them up when at the end of the day we're getting Section 8 housing? That's not the way to go. It just doesn't make sense if you can avoid it. And so I don't understand the disparity here. And it just doesn't make sense to me. And I really wonder and question the integrity of John Rubo with respect to this particular portfolio, because his landlord is one of the landlords he's been promoting. And that becomes questionable whether he should even have voted on legislation that impacts him directly. So these are major issues that are usually kept under the table by so many people in Yonkers politics, and that's where it goes wrong. Okay, well, let's just look at, one thing I have to look at. Bear with me a moment. Bear with me a moment because I have to do this. And wait a minute. And one more thing, sorry. Okay, I think I've got this done. What I want to do is, well, you know what, before we move on, let's find out what we're doing at the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be back. We'll cover some international and national news.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
And if you are interested in reaching out to the Yonkers Tribune, they've got a new number now, which makes it easy to reach them. That is, it's a number for their office, a number for their cell, same number for their text, and the same number for leaving a voicemail. So that one number for all those modalities is 347-415-4326. Again, the number, 347-415-4326. That's for the Yonkers Tribune. Now, let's cover some really important news. And this is part of our Bluetooth series. We've been at it with respect to Bluetooth now for 8 years. So it's called Bluetooth, Yonkers from the Top Down, an amalgam of spin versus reality with a dose of hypocrisy by me, Hezzy Aris. we published this yesterday. Should you have occasion to stroll about the city of hills, quote unquote, where visions expressed in terms of constructed ambiguity are expressed too often by the political elite, you will quickly come to recognize the grandeur of expression that lacks the integrity of reality. You will be told the tale of mirage rather than the potential of a vision that can be systematically planned to become a reality over time. It won't take too long to recognize that the meaningless and innocuous terms of grandeur expressed are the controlling strings that protect and hold the marionettes in place and in check. The demeanor of Yonkers has changed from the one-time Republican red, morphed into an intermediate purple, and has now transitioned into a Democratic blue. Even so, the dogma of the past has been eclipsed by powers of brokers akin to chameleons, who are the present hidden persuaders who speak with forked tongues in order to gain support from potential voters now, yet failing to deliver years later. It's something that we were even talking about today when we talked about Corazon Piedra. We'll see how she goes. It has long been recognized that when crime rates rise in New York City, the soft underbelly of neighboring Westchester County's vulnerability is exposed. Yet were one to a crime statistics from our neighbor to the south, with no notice of any crimes having been divulged from Police Commissioner John Mueller's communications department, noted, the integrity and veracity of the Yonkers Police Department is suspect, and it questions who in the city of Yonkers is permitting the omission of the almost daily crimes that take place in the city. And so, Yonkers Police Department's unquestioned plausibility becomes acceptable, emboldened as it is by Yonkers City Hall insiders, despite its cover-up of an alternate reality. Let's set that aside and reflect for a moment in assessing the bail reform system protocol recently enacted. These get-out-of-jail cards, end quote, permit a, quote, to do it again, end quote, capacity. Yonkers continues to remain murky about its conduct. Taxpaying Yonkersites have little time to decipher the inner workings of its political families, often confused by the lack of corroboration by different media outlets who remain unaware and more likely concerned over deleterious repercussions to, quote, telling it like it is, end quote. As Yonkers City Hall and the Yonkers Board of Education trustees talk a good game, the financial return on investment along the waterfront remains a pipe dream of their making, with no positive impact on the city's fortune yet to be realized or designed for other purposes yet to be divulged. Perhaps this is the opportune moment to contemplate what defines this construct. New condos inhabited by neighbors not financially able to make the waterfront their residence at market rates take up residence under the guise of Section 8 housing subsidies, as attested to by people in the know, undermining the cul-de-sac, quote-unquote, construct of the waterfront developments is the lack of supporting amenities that would be a natural draw to the majestic Hudson River with views of the Palisades of the Empire State Building, as well as the breathtaking panorama of our north, to our north, rather. Supporting services such as restaurants are few in number. No cleaners, no laundry services, an unchecked homeless population, a lack of police security, among other concerns that have failed to mimic the successes of Hoboken, New Jersey, or Brooklyn, New York. The Yonkers waterfront is flanked north, east, and south by residents concerned over the challenges of their neighborhood being gentrified and dreading the prospect of being forced out to find affordable dwellings elsewhere. With low-income residents abutting the waterfront, millennials are not drawn to the area but repulsed from the area as if it could be likened to a northern version of the Bermuda Triangle. There is, however, time to take corrective action, but only if developers are advised that the supporting amenities such as mentioned herein are created in new development sites and imposed on the ground and first floors of existing buildings already built. The waterfront can accommodate an upwardly mobile resident looking to relax, play, and enjoy the waterfront were it able to attract supporting services beyond the residences themselves. Yonkers needs advisement from those who are knowledgeable on how to create a waterfront that is planned, rather than a poorly assembled hodgepodge of buildings that are deficient of places to dine, engage in recreation, a gym, cleaners, essential food items, lest it lose its luster and in time is avoided like a northern Bermuda Triangle with no place to go other than to and from the three Metro North rail stations situated along the Hudson River waterfront to the safety, quote-unquote, of their apartments. The waterfront is landlocked from the south, east, and north, with the Hudson River along the eastern border. Well, now, the waterfront development languished from the time of the Spencer, Amoconi, and the Spano administrations. Although development has moved ahead physically, the financial returns have to unfurl to embellish Yonkers' budgetary demands. New York State's out-of-control budget planning debacle is not likely to deliver any financial subsidy this fiscal year, no matter how often the cries of our elected officials protesting otherwise. I won't be holding my breath, will you? Well, the waterfront has long been riddled with false calls to the Yonkers Fire Department and calls for service to the Yonkers Police Department. The YPD once had a police bicycle patrol that transformed the area from troublesome to law-abiding. However, since the bicycle patrol was decommissioned, the dignity and integrity of the Yonkers Police Department was emboldened by troubling internal allegations, permitted inappropriate pension padding schemes, suffered an ever-growing addiction problem, and the shared intimacy of sharing coffee with a cup. Yet nothing has gained credible traction over the past two decades that has the capacity to potentially extinguish, even diminish, the disparaging descriptive that undermines the capacity and prospect of the city of Yonkers, as does the term, quote, Yonkers, the city of hills where nothing is on the level, end quote. A recent Yonkers Rising article featured the newly promoted Yonkers Police Commissioner John Mueller smiling from ear to ear. The photo might kindle one's curiosity and imaginations to what the PC might be peddling to the uninformed citizen. PC Police Commissioner Mueller's reported bellyaching and perplexed about the bail reform system, like so many others throughout the New York State criminal justice system. Is it even conceivable that all police chiefs, police commissioners, union heads, local leaders, and their lobbyists didn't see this tsunami coming? Mueller asserts he is here to make and keep people safe. At issue then is from whom? Well, has YPD Commissioner John Mueller conveniently forgotten the Yonkers PBA Christmas party when he celebrated with his drunken best friend forever, Yonkers Police Benevolent Association President Keith Olson, when Olson physically assaulted another? Was Mueller so concerned when false allegations and threats were being hurled against individual citizens and other police personnel? Where was his integrity when Yonkers Police Department began to lie in respect to respective search warrants? What about the police personnel that are known drug users, or Yonkers Police Precinct 3 police officer who is still missing? Yes, John Mueller and Keith Olson, gone are the days when you went to the mayor's office carrying trumped up allegations against other bosses and police personnel. Two loquacious double talkers who can no longer blame nor backstab former Yonkers Police Commissioner Charles Gardner anymore. Yonkers Police Department has been driven on the wrong side of the road for some time now. The best alternative for those Yonkers police officers is to wake up and support new, honest leaders, not leaders that sell them out and tell them that they can never be fired from the Yonkers Police Department because of the undermining contrivances of the Yonkers PBA. That construct is likely to wither sooner rather than later, or if you prefer to believe, perhaps there is a bridge to care to buy. There is a bridge you may care to buy. So Mueller is in control now, and he and Olson will have no one but themselves to blame. In the meanwhile, Mueller and Olson were mentioned in the Journal News low HUD top earners list. Even Mueller is considered management. He received built-in overtime as a police chief, while Olson's best union trustees, who all jumped ship recently, made 4 to 5 years worth of straight pension padding. Not bad for spreading Olson's misinformation about the PBA membership. Has anyone recently heard from Yonkers PBA president Detective Keith Olson lately? Yeah, that was some trade-off. Now that Gardner's out, his singing lessons have stopped. He has been kicking union members' cash over to Nick Spano's Empire Strategic Planning's lobbying firm since 2014. Is it possible that the rockin', sockin', punchin' PBA president didn't see the change coming while endorsing so many politicians? Now that this reality issue is on the table, let's be honest. New York State police personnel and their elected officials set off the police tsunami. Yet, crime has been a big uptick, has seen a big uptick in Yonkers, and sorry to say, the 17% uptick will spread like the coronavirus if something is not done quickly. While all other surrounding counties and boroughs are reporting that their communities are feeling the wrath of the bail reform change, like Yonkers riggers, they claim they can't see anything from their crane booths. Well, truth be told, the city of Yonkers controls some of the local yokels' news feeds in the hopes that they will turn, they will in turn get some advertisement space sold. So if they want to get something, color within the lines to keep in step that Yonkers is, quote, so, end quote, safe. The Journal News tries, but it is fed the bare-bone minimum, like when the Yonkers Police Department is forced to put out press releases, knowing damn well that if they don't, others will outside, uninfluenced, other outside uninfluenced agencies will. It was quite hysterical to hear that the Yonkers mayor, Mike Spano, was going to foil records from New York City concerning all the homeless people who were shipped to Yonkers. By the way, if you happen to make it past the sleeping vagabonds on the waterfront, you have to don a surgical mask so as to not become disoriented by the smell of urine on footsteps leading to the Yonkers Riverfront Public Library, as well as to other local businesses. The point is that the Yonkers Police Department does not put out crime statistics to the general public, and one has to assume that their underreporting or their not reporting crime statistics will embellish their pipe dream of attracting renters. It is being reported that the, quote, new and greatest, end quote, PBA-backed police commissioner has done away with CompStat or computer science modules that track crimes and applies the necessary resources and personnel that comes about under the auspices of the New York Police Department in the 1990s. It must have broken the PC Mueller's heart, since he and others used to carry around CompStat author Jack Maple's book, who was Deputy Police Commissioner under New York Police Department Commissioner William Batten. Now there are reports that Mueller just wants to have monthly meetings that will only include his hand-fed loyalists and others that are too scared of retribution to really say anything to a guy that knows, quote, everything, end quote. It is also a way to bottle up the flow of information, making it even more difficult for the public to be aware of what is taking place in Yonkers. One thing is for certain, the city of Yonkers, the Yonkers PC Mueller, and the punching machine Keith Olson appear to be keeping the public in the dark as to what has been occurring internally for quite a while now. The good news is that finally others within Yonkers are coming forward and filing formal complaints to the city of Yonkers itself, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the New York State Attorney General's office. Yonkers politicians have no control over other agencies digging into police misconduct, since no real crime data or any transparency from the city's police department is forthcoming. in fact, subsumed. Just taking what other agencies and other media outlets have reported, it seems that crime or official police misconduct, drug usage, and drug addiction is on the uptick within the Yonkers Police Department. Last week, a federal agency became aware that 16-year member of the Yonkers Police Department, one Christian Carrasco, was arrested and charged for attempting to sell Yonkers Police Department Emergency Service Unit, ESU, equipment overseas. This is just another example of how Yonkers Police Department is out of touch with the real world. It was the Department of Justice that informed the YPD when it should have been the other way around. The takeaway over this happening that the DOJ is watching this is that the DOJ is watching the city of Yonkers, no doubt about it. At issue is whether the city of Yonkers will recognize the reality formerly derisively conjectured is now in actuality a reality. So Yonkers PBA actions need to be looked into. When a PBA president or any other union leader can stand up in front of the membership and brag about having other members' personnel files, or how they handle police investigations, or target other personnel civilians through threats of retaliation and fear of being physically attacked, or attempt to taint investigations because of who they are, one can reasonably presume they have no accountability. Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano's communication director, Christina Gilmartin, asserted that Mueller/Olson gifting overtime to their fellow officers was anathema to their conduct. Yet, what about the ones that are currently being denied overtime by current police commissioner Mueller? What about the retiring personnel that were intentionally denied overtime because they were accused of refusing to write misleading statements? As for Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano or whomever speaks for him, he alone is responsible as to what has been occurring within the Yonkers Police Department. As for the new bail reform system, New Yorkers who become victims of violent criminals that have been let out because of some politician from Albany should bring a case, a cause of action against all those responsible for this system that puts all New Yorkers at risk of being a statistic unless they reside in Yonkers, because Yonkers bureaucrats don't inform the public. Even so, they too should be named. So that's the story. That's our editorial, affectionately known as the Hezitorial. So let's quickly look and see what else is going on around the world. One second. This has become very important. Evidently, the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, must be present for the start of the corruption trials set for March 17th, the Justice Ministry has said. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's corruption trial will start on March 17, 2 weeks after Israel holds its third national election in less than a year, the Justice Ministry said today. Netanyahu is the first sitting Israeli prime minister to be charged with a crime, has denied any wrongdoing in the three corruption cases against him. In addition to his legal battle, Netanyahu, who heads the right-wing Likud party, is fighting for his political life in a March 2 election after inconclusive ballots in April and September. Well, in a statement, the ministry said Netanyahu, in power for the past decade and Israel's longest-serving leader, will be required to attend the Jerusalem District Court for the first session to hear an indictment against him. A three-judge panel will hear the case. Netanyahu has denied any wrongdoing in three corruption cases. Charges, which were formally filed with the court last week, the court 3 weeks ago, include bribery, breach of trust, and fraud. Netanyahu, 70, is accused of wrongfully accepting $264,000 worth of gifts, which prosecutors said included cigars and champagne, from tycoons, and of dispensing regulatory favors in alleged bids for improved coverage by a popular news website. He could face up to 10 years in prison if convicted of, and a maximum 3-year term for fraud and breach of trust. My God, so we'll have to see where all that goes. This is very interesting as well. The Turkish courts have acquitted defendants in the landmark Gezi Park protests trial. According to Istanbul Today, acquitted 9 leading Turkish civil Society activists of terrorism-related charges in relation to anti-government protests, including philanthropist Osman Kavala. Now, the trial of 16 leader activists was seen by critics as a momentous bid by the government to crack down on opposition voices and criminalize mass anti-government protests. The defendants were accused of organizing anti-government protests in an attempt to overthrow the government in 2013. The court ruled that Kavala, the sole defendant still in jail, should be freed. The trial against seven other defendants, some of who escaped overseas, will continue. The protests began to protect a small park in central Istanbul from being redeveloped as an Ottoman-style shopping mall, but grew into a wider protest movement across Turkey, challenging the president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who was Turkey's prime minister at the time and is now Turkey's president. Well, the trial took place on Tuesday in a courthouse near the Silivri Maximum Security Prison campus on the outskirts of Istanbul. Rights groups, lawmakers, and hundreds of supporters arrived to observe the trial. Many burst into applause when Kavala entered the courtroom. The prosecutor had been seeking a life sentence in solitary confinement without parole for Kavala. Architect Musella Yapici and Yigit Aksakolu, who works on early childhood development and spent 221 days in pretrial detention. They rejected the accusation that they tried to overthrow the government and say the protests were simply an exercise of democratic rights. Yapici, who is a member of the Taksim Solidarity, a group working for the area's urban issues, has already been tried for her involvement charges and was acquitted in 2015. Defense lawyers say their witnesses have yet to be heard and that the evidence has not been adequately presented. The prosecutor asked that demands to hear the witnesses on Tuesday be rejected, and the court agreed. The prosecutor was also demanding 15 to 20 years in prison for six other defendants, among them filmmakers, a lawyer, and an urban planner for aiding an attempted overthrow. Kavala was arrested 4 years after the protests and held in pretrial detention for 840 days. In the December ruling, the Strasbourg Court, European Court of Human Rights, said that Kavala's right to liberty was violated by a lack of reasonable suspicion and that his extended detention served, quote, the ulterior purpose of reducing him to silence, end quote, with a, quote, chilling effect on civil society, end quote. The 63-year-old is a businessman, a business person, and the founder of a nonprofit institution that focuses on cultural and artistic projects for peace and dialogue called Anadolu Kultur. Now, Kavala was or has maintained that he took part in peaceful activities to defend the environment and the park, which is near his office, and rejected the accusation that he organized and financed the protests. An estimated 3.6 million people joined the Gezi Park protests, according to government estimates, and thousands were injured. Police used tear gas and water cannons to disperse mostly peaceful protesters and have been criticized for excessive force. The Turkish Bar Association puts a number of killed in the unrest at 15, including a police officer, but the prosecutor's indictment against the defendants says five were killed. The discrepancy stems from the inclusion of heart attacks and cerebral hemorrhages thought to be caused by pepper spray, as well as those killed in other protests during the same period. So, very compelling news, that is for sure. Now, one second. Okay, yeah, this is what I want to look for. China says that the death toll in the mainland from the coronavirus has reached almost 1,900. The toll from China's coronavirus epidemic jumped to 1,868 on Tuesday after 98 more people died, according to the National Health Commission. Nearly 72,500 nationwide have been infected by the new COVID-19 strain of the virus, which first emerged in December before spiraling into a nationwide epidemic. There were 1,886 new cases reported today. a decline on Monday's figure and the lowest single-day figure of new cases so far this month. Now, most of the deaths were in Hubei province, the hard-hit epicenter of the outbreak, with five reported elsewhere in the country. Hubei has been locked down to try to contain the virus, with tens of millions of people placed under effective quarantine in the province. The number of new cases reported outside Hubei province was just 79, down from 890 on February 4. It marks the lowest number of new cases outside the virus-struck province since January 23rd. And China's health, National Health Authority has said the declining numbers are a sign that the outbreak is under control. However, the World Health Organization chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said the trend, quote, must be interpreted very cautiously, end quote. Trends can change as new populations are affected. It is too early to tell if this reported decline will continue. Every scenario is still on the table, he told reporters on Monday. Chinese health officials have urged patients who recovered from the coronavirus to donate blood so that plasma can be extracted to treat others who are critically ill. Now, plasma from patients who have recovered from a spell of pneumonia triggered by COVID-19 contains antibodies that can help reduce the virus load in critically ill patients, an official from the National Health Commission told a press briefing on Monday. More than 12,000 people have recovered and been discharged, according to Health Commission figures. So very, very compelling prospect. So that'll be very, very interesting to see. Well, it's happened. Sex abuse lawsuits have forced the Boy Scouts of America to file for bankruptcy. Barraged by hundreds of sex abuse lawsuits, the Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy protection today in hopes of working out a potentially mammoth victim compensation plan that will allow the hallowed 110-year-old organization to carry on. Now, the Chapter 11 filing in federal bankruptcy court in Wilmington, Delaware, sets in motion what could be one of the biggest, most complex bankruptcies ever seen. Scores of lawyers are seeking settlements on behalf of several thousand men who say they were molested as scouts by scoutmasters or other leaders decades ago, but are now only now eligible to sue because of recent changes in their state's statute of limitations laws. By going to bankruptcy court, the scouts can put those lawsuits on hold for now. But ultimately, they could be forced to sell off some of their vast property holdings, including campgrounds and hiking trails, to raise money for a compensation trust fund that could surpass $1 billion. Now, the bankruptcy petition listed the Boy Scouts' assets as between $1 and $10 billion and its liabilities at $500 million to $1 billion. Well, scouting programs will continue throughout the this process and for many years to come, the Boy Scouts said in a statement. Local councils are not filing for bankruptcy because they are legally separate and distinct organizations. The Boy Scouts are just the latest major American institution to face a heavy price over sexual abuse. Roman Catholic dioceses across the country and schools such as Penn State and Michigan State have paid out hundreds of millions of dollars in recent years. The bankruptcy represents a painful turn for an organization that has been a pillar of American civic life for generations and a training ground for future leaders. Achieving the rank of Eagle Scout has long been a proud accomplishment that politicians, business leaders, astronauts, and others put on their resumes and in their official biographies. The Boy Scouts' finances have been strained in recent years by declining membership and sex abuse settlements. The number of youths taking part in scouting has dropped below 2 million, down from more than 4 million in the peak years of the 1970s. The organization has tried to counter the decline by admitting girls, but its membership rose took a big hit January 1 when the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, for decades a major sponsor of the Boy Scouts unit, cut ties and withdrew more than 400,000 scouts in favor of the programs of its own. Well, the financial outlook had worsened last year after New York, Arizona, New Jersey, and California passed laws making it easier for victims of long-ago abuse to file claims. Teams of lawyers across the U.S. have been signing up clients by the hundreds to sue the Boy Scouts. Most of the newly surfacing cases date to the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. The organization says there were only 5 known abuse victims in 2018. Well, the Boy Scouts credit the change to an array of prevention policies adopted since the mid-1980s, including mandatory criminal background checks and abuse prevention training for all staff and volunteers, and a rule that 2 or more adult leaders be present during all activities. In many ways, the crisis parallels the one facing the Catholic Church in the United States. Both institutions boast of progress over recent decades in combating abuse, whether by priests or scout leaders, but both face many lawsuits alleging negligence and cover-ups, mostly decades ago. Quote, "We are outraged that there have been times when individuals took advantage of our programs to harm innocent children," said Roger Mosby, the Boy Scouts of America president and CEO. "While we know nothing can undo the tragic abuse that victims suffered, we believe the Chapter 11 process with the proposed trust structure will provide equitable compensation to all victims while maintaining the Boy Scout of America's important mission." The Boy Scouts of America said it is encouraging all victims to become or to come forward to file a claim in the case. A deadline for filing claims has not yet been set by the bankruptcy court, but the Boy Scouts of America said that would likely happen later this year. Among other matters to be addressed in bankruptcy court, the fate of the Boy Scouts' assets, the extent to which the organization's insurance will help cover compensation, and whether assets of the Scouts' 261 local councils will be added to the fund. "There are a lot of very angry, resentful men out there who will not allow the Boy Scouts to get away without saying what all their assets are," said lawyer Paul Moniz, who represents numerous clients suing the Boy Scouts of America. They want no stone unturned. Amid the crush of lawsuits, the Boy Scouts of America recently mortgaged the major properties owned by the national leadership, including the headquarters in Irving, Texas, and the 140,000-acre Philmont Ranch in New Mexico to help secure a line of credit. Well, founded in 1910, the Boy Scouts have kept confidential files since the 1920s, listing staff and volunteers implicated in sexual abuse for the avowed purpose of keeping predators away from youth. According to a court deposition, the files as of January listed 7,819 suspected abusers and 12,254 victims. Until last spring, the organization had insisted it never knowingly allowed a predator work with youths, but in May, the Associated Press reported that attorneys for abuse victims had identified multiple cases in which known predators were allowed to return to leadership posts. The next day, Boy Scouts Chief Executive Mike Serbo, or Serbo, wrote to a congressional committee acknowledging the group's previous claim was untrue. Now, James Kretschmer of Houston, among the many men suing for alleged abuse, says he was molested by a scout leader over several months in the mid-1970s in the Spokane, Washington area. Regarding the bankruptcy, he said, "It is a shame because at its core and what it was supposed to be, the Boy Scouts is a beautiful organization." Very, very frightening what goes on. This is very interesting because I never thought I would hear of something like this, but very interesting indeed. Evidently, a French town has suspended its ties with a Polish twin city over lesbian, gay, and bisexual and transgender rights. Very compelling. A Polish mayor on Monday deplored the decision by a sister town in France to suspend 25-year official ties with her town because it declared itself an area free of LGBT ideology. The mayor of the southeastern town of Tuchel, Magdalena Marszalek, blamed the rare decision by the French community. It had been twinned with Saint-Jean-de-Braye on campaigning ahead of the local elections there. She expressed regret that severing ties will cut friendly relations with among residents, as Touchau will no longer be able to sponsor visits by people from Saint-Jean-de-Braye. Marshallek said that many of her community do not identify with the declaration adopted last year by local councils of councillors, rather, of Poland's ruling Conservative Law and Justice Party. Now, the sister municipality in central France suspended ties last week and said in a statement that France is committed to combating human rights violations based on sexual orientation. We cannot accept that the ties that unite our two cities by a twining, or by a twinning, I think is the right way of pronouncing it, by the twinning oath be tainted. We condemn the position taken by our twin city of Touchau. Touchau was among other towns in southeastern Poland that adopted the declaration in May, saying they wanted to defend themselves against radicals who attack freedom of speech, childhood innocence, the authority of family and school, and the freedoms of business people. Now, the declaration came in reaction to Warsaw Mayor Rafał Trzaskowski, an opposition politician, declaring the capital city supportive of the LGBT community and its rights. Now, Poland's ruling party and other social conservatives say they are trying to protect children and traditional families from being demoralized and corrupted by a growing gay rights movement. So it is. Now let me just quickly see what else is happening. Bear with me a moment. One second here. Let's see if we can get this right. One more second. Well, this has come about, didn't realize this. Evidently, the United States has sanctioned Russia's Rosneft subsidiary over its trade with Venezuela. The United States today announced sanctions against a subsidiary of Russian state-controlled oil giant Rosneft over its continued trade with Venezuela in defiance of Washington's attempt to break leftist President Nicolas Maduro's grip on power. Officials in President Donald Trump's administration said Rosneft Trading SA and Rosneft Vice President Didier Casimiro were targeted in the latest measures. One official, speaking on condition of not being identified, called Rosneft Trading SA the prime culprit in helping Maduro escape the effect of U.S. economic sanctions. Well, this is sending a message that we will not stand idly by as foreign extracontinental or other enmities help the Maduro government maintain and sustain its repression, he told reporters. Now, Rosneft Trading has been the overwhelming provider of trading in the Maduro regime of oil and has provided the overwhelming amount of financial resources and hard currency that has been coming in to the Maduro regime. And therefore, this action should have a significant impact on the Maduro government and regime, the official said. Well, another administration official also has not to be named said the sanctions would hit Rosneft Trading SA business in the United States, but also send ripple effects through the country's wider activities. The designation of Rosneft Trading and Didier Kazimirov means that anyone outside the United States runs the risk of being sanctioned themselves, the official said. Moscow's support for the Maduro government is having huge consequences for them, one of the administration officials' briefing reporters said. The official said that the United States is determined to bring down Maduro through its maximum pressure campaign, which currently is at 50 to 60%. We hope never to have to get to 100% of maximum pressure, the official said, responding to a question of whether the United States could ever carry out a military campaign in Venezuela. Well, despite U.S. sanctions and Washington's recognition of opposition leader Juan Guaido as the legitimate president of Venezuela, Maduro and his military backers retain a tight grip. More than 50 countries have joined the United States in recognizing Guaido, saying that Maduro's 2018 re-election was rigged. Well, but Maduro has survived in large part thanks to economic, military, and diplomatic backing from Russia, as well as support from China and communist Cuba. Earlier this month, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov visited Caracas, where the U.S., where he said U.S. sanctions were illegal and the main cause of the crisis in the Venezuelan economy. Maduro on Monday accused Trump of plotting an invasion and said, "We are not afraid of military combat and we are going to guarantee peace." So that's what he said. So let's just see what else is happening. One second here. Well, there's a spotlight on diversity, politics, and the Nazi past at the 70s Berlin Film Festival. Diversity, politics, and revelations from the Nazi era will dominate the agenda when the Berlin Film Festival launches its 70th edition in the heart of the German capital this Thursday. Very interesting. One of the of Europe's biggest cinema events alongside Cannes and Venice, the Berlinale, will this year showcase female directors and political films from across the globe while also confronting hard truths about our own murky history. Following furious debate in Hollywood with the dominance of white and male nominees at recent award shows, the Berlinale new directors have claimed the 11-day festival will represent the diversity of cinema. Quote, my goal is to ensure a platform for the films. We want to give room to diversity, said co-director Carlo Chatrian. I don't say that we are presenting perfect films, but films that represent cinema in its diversity. News chief Chatrian and Mariette Riesenbeck told or take charge of the festival for the first time this year after former boss Dieter Koslick ended an 18-year spell at the helm in 2019. Last year, Koslick signed a 50-50 pledge to commit the festival to gender parity in future, calling for transparency in selection and an even gender ratio in top management. At a recent press conference, Riesenbeck pointed out that the majority of section directors were now women after recognition of the festival structure, yet only 6 of the 18 films in the running for this year's Golden Bear, quote-unquote, are directed by women, one fewer than in 2019. They include British director Sally Potter's The Road's Not Taken, starring Javier Bardem and Salma Hayek, and First Cow by U.S. Indie director Kelly Reichardt. Now, a number of high-profile female figures are also set to grace the red carpet this year. British Oscar winner Helen Mirren will receive a Lifetime Achievement Award, while former U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is set to appear for a five-part documentary on her life. Well, Chatrian has warned against stamping the Berlinale as a political event, yet politics will be front and center in the 70th edition. The anniversary has already been overshadowed by revelations that Alfred Bauer, the Berlinale's founding director, was a high-ranking Nazi. The prestigious Alfred Bauer Prize, previously won by the likes of Baz Luhrmann, was suspended after an investigation by newspaper Die Zeit highlighted Bauer's standing in the Nazi Party. On Tuesday, festival organizers announced that they had commissioned the Munich-based Institute for Contemporary History to investigate Bauer's role in the Hitler regime. Now, the festival program also includes a wealth of politically charged films. Controversial program also includes a wealth of politically charged films. Controversial Russian artist project, DAU, will make its first appearance in Berlin since its 2018 plan to reconstruct the Berlin Wall in the heart of the German capital was thwarted by city officials. Two DAU films will be shown at the Berlinale, with one DAU Natasha among those in question. So that's the story there. Well, I see it's 11:30. I don't see anything specific to pull me away as far as news is concerned. There probably is a lot of news, but we're going to close for the day. Today's Tuesday. We're not going to be doing any programming tomorrow, so there's no show tomorrow. There will be a show on Thursday, and we will not be operating again on Friday. So that's the story at this end. So I want to thank you all for being with us today. And, I forgot to tell you this. Michael Bloomberg has surged in the polls and has qualified for the Democratic debate in Las Vegas. After garnering 19% support in a national poll, the billionaire will be on the debate stage, where he is certain to be a target of onstage criticism. It's an article in the Washington Post written by Reed J. Epstein. So former Mayor Michael R. Bloomberg of New York has qualified for Wednesday's debate in Las Vegas, the first time the billionaire will appear on stage alongside his Democratic presidential rivals. A national poll from NPR, PBS NewsHour, and Marist released on Tuesday showed Mr. Bloomberg with a 19% support, putting him in second place behind Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who had 31%. And that was a substantial surge since the group's poll in December, when Bloomberg received only 4% support. Well, the survey was the fourth national qualifying poll since mid-January that showed Mr. Bloomberg with at least 10% support, enough to earn him an invitation to the debate stage before the deadline of 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time today. Mr. Bloomberg will face off against Mr. Sanders, Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, former Vice President Joe Biden Jr., and Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend. The debate, which will air on Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, will be hosted by NBC News, MSNBC, Telemundo, and the Nevada Independent. So, if you want to tune in, that would be interesting. And again, don't forget to tune in for tonight's City Council meeting. And it starts at 6:30. So tune in at www.yonkersny.gov. All right, so we'll say goodbye, and thank you for being with us. All the best. We'll speak to you on Thursday with the Driving Me Crazy crowd. Goodbye.